Tonight, a few somewhat disparate topics. The first two are more closely related, and the last one kind of is a little unrelated, but kind of thrown in. But the first two have been things that I've been wondering about for a long time. Internet shopping ethics. So I'm not going to speak about the issue of Shabbos and like ordering right before Shabbos, those kinds of things. I'm not sure if I spoke about that in the past or not, but that's not the topic. Tonight's topic is really about the ethics of taking part in online shopping and things that come up. So issue number one is allowed at the expense of a local store. Is there any issue to say that, well, we have local stores, and it's not right to ignore the local economy in order to just save a few bucks, or maybe convenience, or perhaps save on taxes by getting things online? That's part of the reality, is that you will be able to save on taxes as well, although sometimes, yes, it seems like some websites are starting to catch up on that. Yeah. So the first issue is more closely related to what is generally assumed to be an issue of Hasagas Gvul. Hasagas Gvul, or commonly called Hasagas Gvul, that is when we have commonly known as the kosher pizza store problem. When you have one pizza store, how could the second pizza store open up? Isn't that a problem with competing with the first pizza store? And that'll be taking away their business. As a friend of mine used to...
I always thought there was a general understanding that within a small radius that you weren't allowed to open up a similar store?
No, there might be if there's an issue of not having enough to support it. But there are some people that then will abuse that and say, well, as once I was discussing this with my colleague Rabbi Holland in Phoenix, he once said to me, no, I'd like to meet the guy who opened up the second pizza store in Borough Park. Like, who did that? Right, it's a little hard to say. There should be one pizza store for all of Borough Park to serve the entire community. So at some point, it expands. So there is a complicated discussion about this in Maseches Bava Basra, which I pulled out. And part of what's complicated is that there's a whole... Much of the sugya seems to be following the opinion that we don't actually follow. So it's a complicated sugya to figure out what the psak should be. But here is the Mishnah. The Mishnah says Rabbi Yehuda Omer, this is actually a different Mishnah. We'll get to the Bava Basra in a second. But Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yichalek hachanvani kalayus ve'gozim letinokos, that it is inappropriate. A shopkeeper should not distribute parched corn or nuts, commonly known. If you look in Rashi, Rashi says dum-dums b'lashon laz, right? That this is talking about the dum-dums or lollipops or whatever, which seems to be all over. So you shouldn't give those, you're not allowed to give those out to children. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Why? Because, mifnei shehumar gilin lavo etzla, because that will get them to come to you. To which the shopkeeper who puts out the dum-dum says, duh, right? That was kind of the idea. So the Chachamim, however, say that it is okay. So the Gemara comments, my time, and the Gemara says if there's a few other things, but the Gemara goes on and says, my time I durabanan. What's the reason that durabanan said it's okay? Isn't it an unfair commercial practice? So Dharma life, unless he could say to him, listen, anami pligna amgozi viat palig shiski. Says, I'm going to give out nuts, and you can give out plums, or I'll give out dum-dums and you'll give out sucking candies, right? You can figure out something else to give out. It's not an unfair practice, because you have the ability to do it as well. Right? So that is a premise of the Gemara, is that capitalism is good and competition is okay. We don't necessarily ignore all capitalistic tendencies in order to maintain for people to maintain their job. As I've pointed out in more extensive shiurim on this topic, whenever you discuss Hasagas Gvul issues, right, issues of this competition or unfair competitive practices, we usually forget about the third character, right? The first character is the guy who was there first. The second character is the guy who was there second, trying to impose his will on the first character. However, there's a third character which often goes unnamed in these halachos, and who is that? Me, right? That's the customer, right? And to say that we're going to make sure that person A maintains all of his rights at the expense of person B, so that we could stomach, but at the expense of person C, at the expense of the customer, so the Torah finds that problematic. The Torah finds that the customer should lose out because of this. That doesn't seem to be the way that we follow. So the Gemara comments in Maseches Baba Basra, in source number 2, Amar Rav Huna, Parade the Rav Yehoshua, Shitli, Bar Masa Avar Masa Achrisi Matzi Ma'aki. He says, it is obvious to me that if one person from one city goes to another city, so the people in the other city could hold them back. I mean, we will allow competitive practices, but you have to be in the game, right? To just show it, to just parachute in from someplace else. So that is going to, that we find problematic. However, V'yishayach v'charga d'hacha, but if you start paying taxes over here, so then we have what to talk about. Lo Matzi Ma'aki, we're not allowed to keep you out. This is bar mivoa denafshe lo matzi ma'akiv. He says, and if you're two people in the same mavoi, so you're not allowed to keep the other person out. So to come in all the way from the outside is a problem. However, if you're already participating in the in the
established residence.
Right, you established some type of residency or some type of license to be there, so then we're going to permit you to be there. However, right, so this, if you just look at those Gemaras, and that's all we knew, so now we have our stores around here, perhaps we even have stores around here that go pretty far. Chava now has transferred to King of Prussia. She moved from Phoenixville to King of Prussia. So besides having a 20 minutes less of a commute, she told me she's within 5 blocks of any store you could ever possibly want anything to do with. Yes. Right? Whether for you, your children, or your pets.
Second
largest mall in the country, plus everything else. I mean, like, that doesn't even include Costco. Right? It's wild when you go over there. So right in the middle of all that is a Walgreens store. That's where she's at, and we'll see whether that's good or bad, but that's the reality now. Right? So even including King of Prussia, that you have the stores over there, perhaps that does not include the idea, right? So Amazon is now going to fly in, and we're going to drop everything here, right? Do they pay taxes? Do they have a right to do their business here? Right? How does that... It sounds like that would almost be a problem. So I was actually, while researching section number 2... which we'll get to in a few minutes, I came across an article that was in Hamodia that began with this issue. A person calls person B. Shimon calls Levi and says, what's the name of that crockpot that fulfills the Shita Rishon Zalman Orbach? He says, I don't know. It's the kind that has the Tama. No. What's the name of it? All right, I can go down and check. But why? He said, well, I want to order it online. He says, well, this, he says, like, Levi knew that Shimon actually had gotten a heter for business to have internet in the house. And now that he had that, he figured he would also be using it for business purposes. But before I looked and saw, that was like the first caveat, then before I looked to see what the actual name of the crockpot was, I said to him, wait, you want to order this online? That's not appropriate. Don't you know that you should be supporting the local vendors? It's a mitzvah to be supporting the local vendors. So it didn't bring a footnote in the article. I'm not sure if that's true. It might be based on this Gemara that one is supposed to support the local vendors. But does that mean that it has to be at the exact to pay extra money for that? Right? Does that mean that I have to now go out of my way to travel everywhere and not have the convenience of it coming straight to my house? Does that mean that I have to go and buy everything at Giant because that's the store here, even though the corporate headquarters is, I think, in San Diego or something?
Well, you could say R&R versus Giant.
Right. Do I have to go to R&R because that person happens to live local? How does that all fit in? So, okay, we'll leave those questions, but the truth is a lot of them, I think, really become irrelevant. Because there is another Gemara. There's a Gemara in Baba Kama. So that's actually pretty interesting. We covered Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, and Baba Kama, all in the first 3 sources tonight. It's pretty good, Alan. So where the Gemara towards the end of Baba Kama comments, Asara Takanos Tikun Ezra. That Ezra, when he came back, as we've learned in our Shabbos afternoon, he came back, so this is not in the Navi, but he established 10 Takanos. So the list is there, right? One of them is that we lane at Mincha, and that we lane on Mondays and Thursdays, and that the courts are Mondays and Thursdays, and you got to watch things. There's a couple things having to do with marital relations, and actually the idea of preparing for a woman preparing to go to the mikvah, right? All those extra preparations that a woman does to go to the mikvah, right? That's actually part of the Tekanas Ezra. That's number 10 on the list. They tried covering it up, huh? But number 9 on the list is yeah, that's some type of undergarment. I'm not sure. I feel like it has to do with making sure that the blood doesn't get away. But I didn't get a chance to look that up. But the v'sheyehu rochlim machzirin ba'iros. Number 9 is that peddlers be allowed to travel about in the towns. So the sound and why. So the Gemara has like 3 words on it. So that the women have a chance to buy perfume. That's what all the Gemara says. So one of the Tekanos Ezra is that somebody's allowed to go knocking on the doors. So who is this guy that is allowed to go knocking on the doors? So the discussion, when the dust settles, Shulchan Aruch paskins as follows. Rochlim hamachs in source number 4. Rochlim hamachsirim ba'iros im b'nei medina yichol na'akman. If there's a peddler that wants to go into the city, the people of the city can't hold them back. And you're allowed to stop a store from opening, but if somebody just wants to go and knock on doors, so it's inappropriate, we're not going to keep him from doing it. Shetakanas Ezra hayu, sheyihu machzirin kadei sheyihu of his son mitzuyin livnos Yisrael. That Tekanas Ezra was, that they should be able to do so. Why? So that spices should be available for the woman. Now, what, does that mean only a spice dealer? What about a, I don't know, a magazine salesman, or who are the people that always knock on the door, or cable salesman, or all those other people that are knocking on the door? What is it about these spice sellers? So the Ramak clarifies it just a little bit. He says, "V'lachein mirali dafka mochri besamim." So only those that sell spices. But then he adds in 3 very, very ambiguous words: "V'chi hai gavna," and similar to them. But when it comes to other things, which we don't know what other things are, so there's no distinction between Rochel and others. So what does the Rama mean by the Chi Hagavna, by other things? What is included in those that are allowed to go knocking on doors? So there is an article, there's an entire website, which is a very fascinating website, jlaw.com, which has many, many articles. If anybody here wants to ever give a shiur on any law-related topic, so that is the place to go to. There is a lot of stuff on that website, very good stuff. So there's an article there by Rabbi Chaim Jachter regarding this issue of Asagas Gvul. And he talks about that Ramah, and he invokes a psak from the Beis Din in Tel Aviv. He says, it should be noted that changing patterns in geography of business impact halachic discussions of completion. Many businesses today do not cater exclusively to their local neighborhoods. For example, the Tel Aviv Beis Din has written that competition between insurance agents should not be restricted according to the distinction between local residents and outsiders, as the insurance industry is not a neighborhood-based field. Okay, what does he mean by that? So the actual psak of the Beis Din of Tel Aviv spells out that it's going based on this Ramah, that how does it interpret the Chi Hagavna and similar things like this? Any business which lends itself to knocking on doors, meaning you can't hold back a person from knocking on doors if you have that ability to also knock on doors. What does that sound like? It sounds like that first Mishnah, right? That you can't hold a guy from having a sale if, guess what? You also have the ability to have a sale. So the Rabbi Jachter continues, and he says this on his own, following this reasoning, geographical location would not limit stores that conduct much of their business through the World Wide Web. Thus, each business must be individually evaluated based on contemporary business conditions to determine if the rules of a Asagas Gvul apply to it. That's a caveat at the end. But what really he's saying is that very nice that you want to say, well, I'm here already, and it's what right does Amazon have to sell things online? So the answer to that person is, well, guess what? You can also sell things online. You can sell things to Amazon. you can make some money off of that market as well. So Jachter is claiming that this whole idea, to make the claim of a Asagas Gvul, that you're not allowed to go buy something online when it is available locally, probably is inapplicable today because anybody really has that opportunity. It's a free world. It's a free internet, and anybody has that opportunity to be able to do that kind of business. The person who claims Hasagas Gvul, right, generally does not win. that is a very weak argument. It doesn't usually work out. That's a person who makes that claim is obviously coming from a position of weakness, right? That's what he's relying on, and it's ultimately not going to work out. Now, it doesn't mean that it's not a good idea to support local businesses. It just means that to make the claim on somebody and say you're not allowed to go shopping online because you have to support the local business, that's difficult to that's a stretch, I think. Yeah.
The thing with the peddlers, it sounds like they're saying that it would be available otherwise.
It might be unavailable for women otherwise, but they can't go. It might be something like that.
Well, it's certainly true for Girl Scout.
Right, but it is. There's a convenience factor also. No. So they're saying anything that you could gain that convenience factor from as well. So that person would have the right. So I don't know what would be excluded. Truth is, I could have. You can send Ray Jack an email, find out what he would exclude. I'm not sure. That's issue number one. To say it's prohibited is a problem. Now, the first topic that I thought of when thinking about this tonight is a thing called... Oh.
That's
right. Yeah?
Sorry.
Right.
Nikki? Today, the world's... the internet has taken over. I mean, it's in our lives today. It's we're consumed by it.
Right.
And I think that the merchant... who is maybe trying to make a living, if he were to sell some of his goods on Amazon, they take a percentage of his, you know, whatever he makes on the product.
Right.
So he loses out by putting his product on because...
Well, if he sells more product, then he doesn't.
Right.
As a result of being on Amazon, he's selling more stuff.
There's greater visibility.
Right, I mean, there's part of this Hasagas Gvul, and we're going to leave Hasagas Gvul now. But part of this issue of unfair practices is, you go to the Diamond District, right? The Diamond District is a good place to do business if you're a diamond dealer, not a bad place, because the more sometimes a mass creates the ability for there to be more business that's being done. So you might have to sell it for less if you're in a place like that, but you're also going to have a lot. The market's going to expand immensely if you're in a place like that. So, and I don't think the Torah is going to try to control that. I mean, the Torah is interested in people being able to earn a living. The Torah is not necessarily interested in that everybody has to be able to remain rich, especially if it's going to be at the expense of other people's convenience, prices, and things like that. Okay, so there is. Has anybody ever here heard this term showrooming before? Am I introducing this term?
Is that the idea that instead of having a store, you just have a showroom?
No. No. Ah, good.
You don't look at it and you buy it and go back and buy it online.
Right. Showrooming is the act of showrooming is that I'm going someplace to look at a product or to shop for a possibility of a product, and then I'm going to go home and buy it online for cheaper. In fact, and I downloaded this app just to see how it worked. I wouldn't necessarily use it. We'll see whether we should use it or not. But there's an app online called crowdbuy.info where you don't even have to type in the product. It is a barcode scanner. So you could take...
There are several of them.
Yeah, I think there are several of them. So I could take this book here and scan the barcode.
Mm-hmm. Show and tell. There we go.
Found the book.
Did it? Yeah.
Yeah. And assuming it works. Laws of Kashrus, a comprehensive. It's available on eBay for $30. And apparently that's it. Now, this app, I'm not sure is the best app, because it doesn't seem to be getting you everything. I bet you could get this for cheaper than $30 online.
I have one called Shop Savvy.
Okay.
Oh. And it's exactly what it does. You walk down the aisles of whatever store, you scan things, it will tell you where you are and what the price is, where you are, if it has that updated information.
Uh-huh.
And then it will tell you what's within certain distances of
right.
For whatever prices.
Right.
So the idea is you go into a store, you see what they're selling something for, and you figure out if you can go one block away and save $3.
Right. Mm-hmm. or go online and buy cheaper as well. In fact, Amazon has this app, and you can do it with Amazon themselves have published this app where you can walk through the store, scan a barcode, and Amazon will tell you if you can buy it cheaper
on Amazon.
Right? So that is something that is known as showrooming. One can Google showrooming and ethics of showrooming or effects of showrooming, and it seems to be that companies are in trouble because of it. Now there are apparently Best Buy and some other companies have said, okay, this is a reality. Best Buy for some reason has gotten in the press because of this, and we're going to compete with it. So they'll say, listen, you can find us any price online for this product, and we'll match it. Right? And not only will we match it, but you have it right here, and we'll get it to your house. Or like
that's where the hook is.
Yeah. They will.
That's
because
the competitive.
People were doing a lot of walking into Best Buy, trying out the electronics, and then going and buying them.
Right. So they were the first ones to complain about it, and now they were the first ones to say, okay, apparently complaining doesn't really do very much. We have to figure out a way. We have to figure out a way to compete with it. So are there any ethical issues when it comes to showrooming? So the. I mean, that's the most obvious way. I mean, not the most obvious way. That's perhaps the most fastest way. But certainly to go into a bookstore, take a list of books, and then go home and see what's see what's new, and then go home and buy it when you can get it cheaper. Right, so obviously, those are questionable practices, or are they not? So the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Baba Metzia, Kishem she'ona b'mekach u'memchar. So there is something called ona. Ona means various things. Ona, when it comes to buying and selling, means that you're not allowed to. Price gouging in either direction is prohibited. What that means is for another share. But just as you are prohibited to do ona when it comes to mekach u'memchar, kach ona b'dvarim. You're also not allowed to do ona with words. So what is an example of doing ona with words? Lo yomar lo b'kama chafet zev hu eino rotza likach. A person should not say to another person, how much does this cost, if he has no interest in purchasing it. Right, and then another example: imaya bal tshuva. If a person is a bal tshuva, lo yomer lo zochor ma'asecha rishonim. Oh, remember what you used to do. Imhu ben geirim lo yomer lo zochor ma'asev asechman. Let's say he's a child of converts. Shouldn't say to him, I remember what your parents did. Right? So as it says, you shouldn't make fun of non Jews. You shouldn't make fun of geirim. So lo yomer lo. So this is an example of. Words. At least this Mishnah places it on the list of not making fun of somebody. You're not allowed to make fun of a Baal Shuv, you're not allowed to make fun of a Ger. Oh, and you're also not allowed to ask somebody how much something costs if you have no interest in buying it. Right? So that implies that we're not talking about a physical damage. It sounds like we're talking about some kind of emotional damage that you cause.
I have no interest in buying that particular product at that particular price at that particular time. If you go off with one of these crazy apps and you find something where the price is, lo and behold, higher than what your friend just told you the price was, you're going to be back there buying it if you really wanted the item.
Well, hold on a minute. I'm out of Mishnah. The people that wrote this never heard of showrooming. Not just because they didn't speak English, but for other reasons also. So hold on. So number one, we have a problem asking somebody how much something costs without having any intention to buy. I'm not saying that's a comparable case. I'm just putting this fact out there, right? Without having any intention to buy it, that's considered ona, right? To walk into a store and make fun, or they say some. Places in Europe, in order for people to afflict themselves, they would walk into a hardware store and ask him for like bread. Or they would go into a bakery and ask him, and then he'd make fun of them, and that's how they would feel afflicted, whatever. Right? So I don't know. It seems like it's a violation of ona. Right? To walk in and to bug the guy is problematic. Hold on! I didn't say it's the same case yet. Comes the Gemara and has another example of ona. Im hayu chamarim mevakshim tivua mimenu. Says if a donkey driver wants to buy grain, so lo yomar lehem, don't say to them lechu etzel ploni shehu mocher tivua. Go to Shmerel, he sells grain. Veyodeya bo shelo macher meolam, and you know that he doesn't sell grain. Okay, so that's another example of ona. Why are you telling a guy to go do some type of business and it's a waste of his time? Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Aflo Yitla Einav al Hamekach Bishash Ein Lo Damin. One is not even allowed to look at an item if he doesn't have the money for it. Sharia Davar Masur Halalev, because this is known only in his heart. Anything that's in the heart, we have to have a fear of Shemayim. Okay, that second part is still unclear to me what that means. But what is Rabbi Yehuda saying? One is not even allowed to demonstrate interest in the product if they don't have the money to buy it. Okay, so we have number one: you're not allowed. The main issue is you're not allowed to ask for a price. You're not allowed to, it sounds like, engage with the seller if you don't have an interest in buying it. And Rabbi Yehuda says you're not even allowed to look at the product if you don't have any interest in buying it.
Because you're getting the hopes
up
of the seller?
Okay. So why? What is the reason? What is the...
What's the issue? Is that the issue?
It could be. That might be the issue. There's several suggestions as to what the issue is. Right, but there's something going on. Okay, so one question is: do we pass in like Rabbi Yehuda? Right. Generally, when we have Chachamim say this, and Rabbi Yehuda says that, so often Rabbi Yehuda is an opinion that we don't necessarily accept. So Rabbi Yehuda, this idea that Rabbi Yehuda says just looking at something when you don't have any intention of buying it, so he says that that's inappropriate. Do we pass in that way? So we move to source number 7. Where there is another, another Gemara, Maseches Pesachim, and there, in the middle, what's a discussion of buying and selling doing in the middle of Maseches Pesachim? So not much, other than that, Rabbi Yishmael makes the following line: Shalosh Dvarim Tziva Rabbi Yishmael Bar Rabbi Yosi Es Rabbi. There's three things that Rabbi Yishmael Bar Rabbi Yosi told Rabbi. The Gemara there is listing off a couple of people's ethical wills and things like, you know, like things like that. So these are the things that he wants him to do, or he wants him to remember. So al tas mum ba'atzmacha, don't cause yourself a blemish. Maihi, what would that be? Lo tahavi lecha dina b'hadei talsa, don't get into a commercial argument with three people. The chad havi baldinach v'trei sadei. So what's going to end up happening is one guy is going to be the baldin, the litigant against you, and the other two are going to serve as witnesses, and then you're going to be cooked. Okay, that's not relevant to us right now. Then second thing he says to him is, v'al tamur al hamekach b'shash ein lo damim. Don't stand by purchasing something when you don't have any money. Okay, so that sounds a lot like what Rabbi Yehuda said. Right? It could very well be the same thing as what Rabbi Yehuda said. However, when you look at this Gemara, this is often a problem when it comes to Gemaras. There's several Gemaras like this, where it starts going through things, you know, what did he tell his children? Right? What was his ethical will? Or sometimes the Gemara has a long list of people, like, why did he merit to live a long life? It's because he did this, that, or the other thing. Or why did he, another place, it's... What will this person forever be known by? So he did this, that, and the other thing. So that whenever you have that, you have a problem. Right? What's the Gemara telling us? Is the Gemara telling us that that's the halacha and you have to do it? Or is the Gemara telling us this is what made him very special, but that's what put him above and beyond a regular person? Right? Regular people don't necessarily keep that. And this person, he's the Halaga whoever, and he was able to, and that's what he was able to master. So how do we accept that or not? It's a problem. I'm not sure there's a mahalach, there's necessarily one way to go on that question. But you see here, he seems to be adopting it as advice for his kids, not necessarily the halacha. Okay, so al tamud al mekach. Now we get into the reasons behind it. Why should you not look at something if you don't have any intention to buy it? So says the Rashbam. The Rashbam is the main commentary when one learns the 10th parak of Pesachim, because Rashi, even though there is a small amount of Rashi on the page, Rashi seems to have not completed what he wanted to complete on the section of Arei Pesachim. So if his grandson, the Rashbam, wrote what he wrote. So the Rashbam comments on this, Lischor v'hamocher Yisrael hu, ve'in l'chad damim liknos. Right? So he wants to buy it, and the seller is a Jew, and he doesn't have the money. Right, v'nimtza mafsido chinam shelo yichenu acher mi'acher shetam ha'pichbo. So you're going to cause the store guy a loss. Why are you going to cause the store guy a loss? Because you're going to pick it up, you're going to look at it, and you say, put it down. And guess what? The guy coming right behind you said, well, if he didn't like it, I'm not going to buy it either. Right, so you're causing him a loss. I actually read this story recently, which is wild to me, that... Now, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, before Sukkot, so everybody has to buy the Dalaminim, you go, you can spend an hour, two, three, 4 hours, whatever. And buying your dalamidas if you're really into it. So apparently Rav Chaim Kanievsky shows up at the marketplace in Bnei Brak, picks up a lulav, looks at it, says, okay, gives the guy whatever it is, 20 shekel, and he walks home. So somebody followed him. It's a good thing, as Moshe Weinberger said in a different context, it's a good thing that there are people like this to follow Gedolim, because otherwise we wouldn't have stories. There has to be that nudnik who's following him home. Like, what's going on? So this person follows him home, and he like runs into his son or his grandson or something and says, you know, I found it very odd that Chaim Kanievsky came and he looked at one lulav, he took it and he went home. So he said to him, let me show you something. And he brings him into the back. And he shows him three barrels of lulavim that are sitting there. He says, why? He said, was it Chaim Kanievsky goes, he picks up a lulav, puts it down, he can't go on to the next one, because he goes on to the next one, people say he's going to go to the first store. So he has to, anytime he picks up a lulav, he goes and he takes it with him. Now, I don't know what happens to all those lulavim. That's a lot of chametz he's got to burn come Pesach time. But that's the way the story was.
All the people that follow him says, that must really be good, so I'm going
to
buy from this.
Oh, so you go. But that lulav, but he already has the lulav. Everybody knows that that you have a variety of lulavs.
The story of Barcelino
hats.
I mean, come on.
So that is the Rashbam, the Meiri. The Meiri, of course, the famous Rishon, the Meiri. The Meiri lived in the late 1200s. Of course, his commentary was famously lost. It was lost and found. So the Meiri is not quoted, is not really in the halachic canon, because when the Shulchan Aruch was being written, when the Beis Yosef was being written, when all of those works were being done, the Meiri was lost, and then it was found. At first, I wasn't able to find the source of it. Then it was found in the Vatican, and somebody went in and memorized a few pages every day. And plus, you're not allowed to write in the Vatican library, so a person went in and memorized a few pages and every day. I'm not sure, but that is, this is the Meiri. So the Meiri says, "Amar Meiri, k'shem sheyesh ona b'mekach u'memchar." Okay, he's quoting, that's the quote from that Mishnah. What does that mean? You're not allowed to kind of bother your friend and cause for him a loss. Bidvarav. And he's not allowed to say to him, how much does this cost, if he doesn't have an interest in buying it? He's going to cause, by he says, he's not going to say, I don't want it. He's just going to say, oh, and he's going to leave. So what's the seller going to think? The seller is going to think, oy vey, my prices must be too high, and he's going to lower the price. He's going to lower the price for the next person. So how is he causing a loss for the store owner? The store owner is now lowering his price, and now he's going to make less money off of the product. That's how he's causing him a loss. And it's going to turn out that you're causing him a loss. Even if no one was there. And even if no one was there to see this, he's going to cause him a pain because he thought that he was going to buy it. Now he's not going to buy it. And then it's going to be like when Nazvarim said, he won't be embarrassed from his words. Okay. So the Meiri really is offering two suggestions here. One is that there's going to be a physical loss, and B, that there's going to be some sort of mental anguish that's going to come of this. And that's kind of, and other commentaries as well, either some of them develop ways that there could be a physical loss. I would add another physical loss. So you go and you have a show. A salesman starting to show you around, or as they call them in B&H, an expert. An expert shows you around. So what are you doing? And you have no interest in purchasing from there, so you're causing a loss. How are you causing a loss? You're taking the time of the salesperson. Now, it could be these stores will say, listen, we want our salespeople talking to anybody. We don't care. It's worth it for us. But that is...
They're probably on commission. So, yeah, you are causing
that loss. If they're on commission, right. Well, right. So you have really... So there's really two lines in saying what's the big problem here. Either the big problem A is that you can figure out a way that it's causing the loss. Now, you're not physically causing a loss, as we talked about last week, grumma, garmi, whatever, right? But you're causing a loss. That's why it's something that should be avoided. It's actually a monetary problem, either by loss of their time or by loss of their money. Or B, you're causing them some type of mental anguish. Now, one could argue in today's stories, you walk into Best Buy and you look around and then you leave. I don't think you're causing too much mental anguish to too many people. I think that's probably a common thing to claim, that that would be mental anguish would be, I would think, would be suspect. But to claim that you are taking people's time, taking their money, etc. So that does, I think that does play in, I think it does play into the to the equation. So I think what, you know, I think al-pi halacha, al-pi according to the psak, I think one has the right to go and look around. I don't think one can make a claim that, you know, wasting people's air conditioning. But you, but to go and to ask questions and to make use of something and to, you know, to play around with something or to test drive something knowing that you're going to go and purchase it online, something like that. So that's probably, that that could very well be a violation of these halachos of
Avodah. I think it's hard to... a store, you're going to get a an expert or whatever, or even anybody is even going to, one, notice you're there, or two, be able to communicate with you in a way about the product that will give you any kind of information.
I don't know, it depends. It depends on the store.
Some not likely.
No. It depends on the store. Some stores, there'll be a guy on you very quickly. Especially depends on what department you're looking at. There'll be somebody very quickly there to talk to you.
Yeah, like the Home Depots and Lowe's. That's their story, is they have expert salespeople.
Right, but you have to those like, there. You have to like kind of harass them. You have to find them.
Yeah,
I don't know. They always try to avoid me. Oh, you must give an engineering vibe off. you have yichus in engineering, so they want to talk to you. Me is the Nebuch rabbi who wants to deal with them.
if we want to buy something.
Okay, yes, Ria.
I don't see how you could have a blanket rule of not. You wouldn't shop first, and then you decide what you want to buy. You want to buy a book, so you go into a bookstore, you need a book for a gift. So you look at 10 different books, and you're looking at the book, and you open the jacket, and you're reading it, and you're reading to
but
see...
you're still intending to buy something.
Well, you're hoping to buy something.
Yeah, that's not what we're talking about. That's not called showrooming. That's called shopping.
Right, but then you could end up not buying anything.
No, you could. That's fair. That's fair. The Gemara didn't say you're not allowed to talk to somebody.
You
put
a plain laptop... and to figure out which features you want and which laptop you want, and then to go home and buy it online, that's not okay.
But if you have in mind,
that was your plan.
That was my plan all along. That's what we're saying.
But also, it says that you don't have any money. Well, there's times you go to a store and you have to decide, gee, next month I'm going to need a new microwave.
So
you're checking out the microwaves. You don't have the money today to buy it, but you want to see the features.
But I think the store will say, "Oh, we want you to come, because we hope you'll come back." This is not that. This is, people my age do, my age and younger, right? You'll go having no intention of purchasing anything. I want to go and see what's new because I know that it's going to be available for much cheaper on Amazon.com. Why in the world would I buy retail? Retail's for losers. I'm going to go and buy something and buy it online. I might have my wallet on me, but that is certainly not my intention. So that's the case. But if you're honestly going in and thinking and looking, so that this is not applicable for that. Yeah.
You'll have an auto dealer who will give you a freebie for test driving, whatever it is. I always feel I shouldn't do it unless I have some intention of buying a car. But they don't care about that. It seems it's hard to know what to do even in this situation.
We went in to test drive, and we really didn't have the intention to buy, but we ended up buying.
That's okay. They're on enough of a margin that I guess it's worth their while.
What about sitting in a shop and just shooting the breeze with the owner? Is that detrimental to him selling things because now you're taking away his time? People who are in the store buying things.
Yeah, I think it's purposeful. I mean, wasting time is the next issue. But if you're going and it depends who wants. Sometimes the store owner is looking for someone to talk to.
Right.
So, okay, that's his decision. To go and volume probably is a problem. Probably fits in this category. Yes?
When I go to a chain store versus an independent, you know, store owned by one person, then I'm cognizant of that and I usually... you know, I even want to buy something if I go into a local store.
The local, right.
Years ago, like my aunt and uncle, they had a
grocery store, and then the chains, the supermarkets, bought everything was bought up.
Right.
So, and the pharmacists, you know, pharmacies, the local.
Yeah. I know that. I know about that.
Okay, but I do. It means something to me. Like I think twice. Like, I really look carefully to see if I can buy something.
Right. But you're very righteous. We've been... There is an idea of righteousness in going out and do that. I don't think anyone would say that that's ridiculous. That's a good thing to do. We're talking about what is... We're on the other extreme. We're talking about what's unethical or borderline ethical. Okay. So the one issue is issues of time. So I saw these sources brought up in the context of like sending mass emails around, perhaps sending mass emails that you expect the other person to read, and you very much want them to read, and you're going to make them feel bad if they don't read it, things like that. So is there any issue about doing that? So the Mesilas Yesharim writes. Mesilas Yesharim is Rosh Chaim Zatu, is considered really the primary Musar text. So in the beginning of the 11th chapter. He points out that the Chazal went out of their way to be lenient on workers. Now, a lot of these leniences aren't really kept today, although technically they're on the books. We generally assume that the owner is lenient on this, but there are leniencies to not wash, to not make bracha achronos, to only do part of birchas hamazon, to only do part of davening. There are such leniencies that are on the books. I don't think anyone really does this today, but that they exist. So he points out, you see how cognizant Chazal was of time and time that's supposed to be spent working for somebody else. So you see the importance of time. So he said, if Chazal is willing to give up, so on the fourth line, he says, "Kavachomer ben Benoshel, Kavachomer ledivrei harishus." Even for something that is for a rishus, shekol schir yom aser behen shul levata molachto shel balabayis. That anybody who's working for a day, who's on a day wage, where we're paying you for these 8 hours, I'd say he's not allowed to waste that time. V'im avar hareze gazlan, and if he does, so then he is stealing. Now, again, today there is some allowances. Usually, bosses do have some allowances. You don't expect that you're working beginning to end without any type of break. But that is the mindset the Mesilas Yesharim has going in. That and anything that one is going to do in order to waste time or in order to waste someone else's time is a form of gezela. So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Gezela, Asr ligzal olasok afilu kolshu. You're not allowed to steal even anything, right? Bein mi Yisrael, bein mi ovi kochavim. Whether it's from a Jew, whether it's a non-Jew, right? So you're not allowed to steal. Even if it's pachos mishava pruta, even if it's less than the value of what we consider the smallest amount of value, it's still prohibited to steal. He says, however, v'im hu davar deleka man dekapit bay, if it's something that the person doesn't care about at all, so then it would be mutter. Kagon, for example, lito mehachavila o mehageder lachos poshinov. For example, you're walking down the block, and there's something stuck in your teeth, right? And you, look at that, a wooden fence. Let me peel off a little splinter in order to get that stupid thing out of my mouth that's been bugging me for the last time. But you could choose to like the example or not. But he happens to be quoting a Yerushalmi. He happens to be quoting from a much earlier text. But that's the example that's given in the Yerushalmi. So v'avze usur b'Yerushalmi, even that is usur mimidas chasidus. Even that is prohibited based on Midas Chasidus, righteous actions. So even though technically it's permissible, it's considered righteous not to. Why? So so the Yerushalmi says something, and I'm very happy because it's finally a source for something that I remember hearing, I believe, from my 7th grade Rebbe, although it might have been my 6th grade Rebbe, it might have been my 8th grade Rebbe. I'm pretty sure it was one of my elementary school Rebbeim. If it wasn't, it was my 9th grade Rebbe. But the Yerushalmi makes the point that yes, it's true, you can take that thing off, and the guy doesn't care, and no one will know the difference, and it's just a splinter that was taken off of a wood fence. He says, but if everybody would have that attitude, what would happen to the guy's wood fence? He wouldn't have a wood fence anymore. So he says, yes, it's true that it's mutter, but recognize that if everybody acts this way, so then that's going to lead to a problem. So avoid doing that in midas chasidus. So what did I hear from one of my rebbeim? It's anywhere from the range of 6th to 9th grade. He said, what is the definition of a mensch? How do you define a mensch? So a mensch is a person that if everybody does exactly as the way you're doing, the world would be better and not worse. That was his definition, right? So there's a lot of things that one could say, like talking during davening. Right? Don't do that. So, okay, I'm whispering to my friend. What difference does it really make? But if everybody would have that attitude, so then the entire place would be talking. Right? So a mensch is a person who if everybody does like you, the situation, the community, the place is going to be better, not worse. So one can, the issue that I was talking about, sending out mass emails or announcements or jokes or all these things that go around, yes, it's true that, oh, what's the big deal? It's just one thing, he could delete or whatever. But if everybody has that attitude, so then everybody's inbox is going to be filled. Everybody's going to be annoyed, right? It's just going to be. It's going to be an immense amount of stuff. So that's what I think a person should keep in mind. I think the idea of menschlichkeit or Mädelichkeit, I guess, as the case may be. Right? What am I doing right now? And if everybody does as I'm doing, would that make the world, community, the room, family, whatever? Would that make it a better place? Or would that make it a worse place? And that perhaps is important. Take a lesson from this night. So, thank you for coming. So.